Okay, now this man is not going to waste your time. First of all, he's in the 1% of asset managers globally on performance. 1%. You take all the asset managers all over the world, he's in the 1 percentile. And it's not just a freak. He's been doing it now for some years. But there's a lot more to Sean Pesch than a great asset manager. 2 months ago, I went up the road here to Caledon. It's about an hour or so north to go and pick up my ID book. I'd lost my other ID book. Yo. And it had been there for who knows how long. And after the wait in the Home Affairs, which is, I don't know, it's a bit better, but not a huge difference, certainly not a calendar. I was going back to my car and there was a long queue of people waiting very quietly in line for some food and a drink. So they'd get to the front, they'd get a roll of some sort and a coffee. So, of course, being of a certain trade, I investigated further, went in there, and I met Mummy. They called her Mummy. She runs a little behind it's like a hole in the wall tuck shop. So this brings us to Sean. I wrote about it, by the way, in our premium newsletter. Although he's been based in the UK for some years, where he's learnt at the feet of the great Dr. Simon Marais when he was there, Sean's heart will always be in South Africa. He allocates a growing and already significant slice of his company's income to help worthy causes here in this country. After he saw that note that I posted, he phoned me. He said, how can he help Mummy? She feeds up to 200 people a day from the money that she makes out of her tuck shop. And she also serves a big boss. She's in a church as well. And he has done so. So last night I spoke to him ahead of his trip here from Heathrow. He admitted that he was exhausted. But he said he had a look at this, you know, upgrading to business class. But he's going to sit in the back of the plane, and about the 100,000 rand that he's going to save, he's going to give that to Mummy. So it'll put another 4 months. Great guys, these members of the BizNews tribe. His fund, Randmore, has delivered returns in the top 1 percentile globally. He's known for his sharp analysis and being a true value investor, but he also has an investment approach that might surprise you. In an industry where management meetings, in other words, going off and meeting with the CEOs, are a sacred ritual, Sean is counterintuitive. He doesn't meet the management of the companies he invests in. He believes the numbers should tell the whole story without the influence of a charismatic CEO. This disciplined, data-driven approach is rare, and it's a testament to his conviction and independence. Those are two words we just love at BizNews. He's not just looking for a good story. He's looking for pure, unadulterated value. Let's welcome a man who lets the balance sheet do the talking, Sean Pesch.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, building wealth and protecting legacy since 2004. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Thanks very much, Alec. That's very kind of you. And I'm glad you've been kind, because putting me after Darvey was not kind. but I was a little bit comforted because I've not heard my wife or my daughter of 23 mention the word Birkin. So I'm quite relieved about that. But if they do, we're going to go to China in search of those 15-dollar carat diamonds. I think that's what we're going to do. So it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to be and present and talk to you guys. And I guess the thing is with stories is, you know, we all love stories. We used to sit around the fireplace years ago. That's how we evolved and learned from each other. And we have to learn from history, and we have to be very careful about what we take from history, and also not to say this time it's different. And so I want to take a couple of trips down some memory lane and ask you to imagine a few things. And the first thing I'd like you to imagine, it's October 2007. okay? And the MSCI China Index is up 156% over the last year. It's up 744% in the last 5 years. You know, that the S&P 500 is up 15% in the last year. It pales in insignificance. And of course, there's always a story. What was the story in 2007 in China? You know, when the Economist had a front cover and it's a giant panda bear climbing up the Empire State Building. Well, the story was they had 5 years of strong GDP growth. In 2007, they reported 11.4%. That had rising private consumption. You know, it was easy to imagine. You've got this massive country, this huge population. They're all emerging. There was low inflation. There was foreign direct investment. There was the Beijing Olympics coming along. I mean, it was a no-brainer, and the markets are strong. Okay, surely a no-brainer. A year later, October 2008, and the MSCI China Index is down 65%. Okay, 65%. The S&P 500 is down 36%. And of course, you had the global financial crisis. And what happens, and it's a bit like I was reminded of this when Davi was talking, because he talked about how long it took him to get up Kilimanjaro, you know, 6 days or whatever it was, and it took him an hour to get down. And that's the thing with markets, okay? Because greed builds. Greed's not instant. Fear is instant. You walk around the corner, you see a lion, you know, you're instantly fearful. And so we've been in an environment where there's been a huge building of greed. You know, you go to a dinner party, your friend's got the stock, they've got rich, da da da. You know, the greed builds. But when fear comes, fear is instant. And so, you know, it's October 2020 and the MSCI China is up 35% in the last year and the S&P's up 10%. And it's October, and you'll recall that this was after COVID and China had locked down, very draconian lockdown. Now they were emerging. So you had this pent-up demand. This was the story then, pent-up demand, emerging, first to emerge from COVID, all this cash on the hip, okay? But then a few things happened. Jack Ma criticized China's regulatory approach. You don't go and criticize the Chinese government. That was the last time he was seen publicly was 24th of October, 2020. And on the 3rd of November, Ant Financial, which was Alibaba, had a stake in it, this huge financial company, which was due to be listed as the world's largest IPO at $37 billion. I mean, that's only a few years ago, and $37 billion. I mean, there's companies that do nothing that are worth $37 billion. It was suspended. Okay. In April 2021, Alibaba was fined $2.5 billion for abusing dominance. And in July 2021, Didi, you recall that taxi company that faced a cyber review. And in mid-2021, you had the education companies all got hit in China. Okay, so by October 2022, 2 years later, MSCI China is down 48%. Over 3 years, it's down 36%, and 5 years, down 40%. And all of a sudden, the world was saying China's uninvestable. And there's a quote, trust is less, from Lady Gaga. I took an expletive out of it, as, you know, typically would be. But trust is like a mirror. You can fix it if it's broken, but you can still see the crack in the reflection. Okay? So you had this great story. A couple of things happened, breached the trust, and the market got absolutely smashed. And I mean, that has persisted. Even in July 2025, a famous strategist, Ed Yardini, says the Chinese government has overstimulated the economy. Bond yields are down to 1.6%. There's too much debt, too much government intervention, too much excess capacity. And on top of that, the rules change on a regular basis over there. Okay. So those are the reasons. China, this was the reasons. Bill Ackman has said something similar. Too much debt, government intervention, rules change, etc. Question I have today. Okay. Has America broken the trust? Is America becoming uninvestable? Because when you apply some of those reasons that people said China was uninvestable, you know, I think it ticks the box. If you look at the broken trust, you know, think about what America has done to the broken trust with Canada, its closest neighbor, its allies in Europe, when they wouldn't let the military, they wouldn't let the technology, they suspended military intelligence with Ukraine. You know, not long ago, they agreed a deal with South Korea because you had huge investment by Hyundai. The other day, Hyundai LG Energy Solutions factory raid was raided by ICE and 475 people were shackled. Okay. So, you know, if you're a foreign country and a foreign company, And you're looking at this going, what's going on here? Norges Bank, you might have seen this a few days ago in the Financial Times, Caterpillar, they were recommended. Norges Bank is the Norwegian sovereign wealth fund, the world's largest sovereign wealth fund. They own some between 1.5% to 2.5% of every company out there, basically. I mean, they're just massive. And one of their consultants had recommended that they sell Caterpillar shares because Caterpillar is being used to flatten houses in Gaza. And Lindsey Graham came out and said to those who run Norway's sovereign wealth fund, maybe it's time you made aware that doing business or visiting America is a privilege, not a right. Okay, so they're now going after the equity investors. And the bond investors, you know, we all know about the debt levels in the US, interest rates are high. You know, they're trying to, the government, the central bank is under threat. I mean, look what's going on here with Lisa Cook, and you know, all those sorts of things that were all known at the time of her appointment, but the government is trying to get hold of controlling the central bank. They already control the Supreme Court, etc. We've got to be awake to these things, because when something happens, okay, it's the 1.5 hours down the hill. And so Bank of America is saying that the cracks are forming in foreign demand for US governments, because these governments around the world own US debt. Japan, China, United Kingdom, all of these guys. So we'll have to see, and it could come instantly. It could be a failed bond auction where all of a sudden there's no demand for the foreign debt. So I think that's one of the things. In terms of government intervention, look what's happened recently with NVIDIA and AMD, where they're now going to have to give 15% of their revenue to the US government. Okay. Intel, they were basically saying we shouldn't, you know, Donald Trump was saying we shouldn't have, you know, the head of Intel, who is, of Chinese origin. You know, he was quite aggressive in his language to him. A few days later, they do a deal where they're going to convert some of their grants into 10% stake in Intel. So these are very aggressive things that are going on here. If you look at how many executive orders, if you look at the mass pardons, but then the El Salvador deportations and et cetera, FBI raiding John Bolton. So Larry Summers perhaps said it best, the classic maxim of foreign policy is unite your friends and divide your adversaries. We've pursued policies that have ignited our adversaries and divide our friends. And look, the other day you had Putin and Modi and Xi all together. So those are some of the reasons that I think, we think at Rand Mill are in play in the US. Now we are bottom-up investors, and there, when we look in the bottom up, there are a couple of other things. And the one is executive compensation is just out of control. You know, the median CEO's compensation of the S&P 500 in the US is $19 million. Okay? In Japan, it's 1.8. Are they 10 times better? In the UK, it's 4, and in Europe, it's. I'm going to read a number of companies here. So you just think about whether you've even heard of them. Veeva Systems, Axon Enterprises, Snowflake. Yeah, we've heard of them. Tevigen Bio Holdings. These are some of the companies that with the highest paid CEOs in 2024, QXO, the CEO, earned $189 million, okay? The top 10 all earned over $84 million. And let me give you an example of an interesting one, which is Warner Brothers Discovery. So there's a guy, David Zaslav, and you know, he was in Discovery, and he built that up. And then they merged with Warner Brothers, who they're now actually going to be separating. They're going to be splitting the two. Their net income in 2022 was $7 billion loss. And in 2024, it was an $11 billion loss. So their net loss increased by 57%. What do you think happened to executive compensation? Surprise, surprise. Stock-based compensation went up 35% from $400 million to $557 million. And his rose to over $50 million. And in, I think it was 2021, he got like $200 million. So we find this all the time when we're looking at companies. We say, okay, what has happened to executive compensation? And it's gone up. Great. So they must be earning more money than they did a few years ago. No, they're actually earning less money. And so, you know, I can totally see why Charlie Munger years ago said, I would rather stick a viper down the front of my shirt than pay a compensation consultant, because that's what these guys are coming up with. Now, I've got to touch on AI, because the question is there a bubble? And we've heard Howard Marks in recent days, in recent memos saying, well, he thinks there's early signs of bubble. We think there's undoubtedly a bubble. Okay, there's not even a question about it. Let me give you a good reason. Anthropic the other day, which is one of the AI engines, was valued at $183 billion in this latest round. Okay. Their annual revenue, their run rate revenue, so they haven't reported this, but this is what it's running at on an annualized basis, is $5 billion. So it's 36 times run rate revenue. Now, if you look at Microsoft, when did Microsoft get to a market cap of $180 billion? In the last quarter of 97. When Microsoft got to a market cap of $180 billion in 1987, it was generating $6 billion of free cash flow. These guys are sucking cash, not even generating $5 billion of revenue. Okay. So the other thing is that if you think about all these technology companies, and sorry, the run rate of CapEx is about $400 billion. Now, yeah, that's what all these guys are spending together. And if you think about that and say, okay, well, let's just pretend you're a business, you spend $400 billion, and these assets, let's, for the sake of simple maths, let's depreciate that over 10 years. Are these AI assets, data centers, going to be worth something in 10 years? Probably not. So that's $40 billion a year. Okay. You've got Anthropic generating revenue of five, OpenAI generating revenue of 12. That's before electricity costs, before the software engineers, all that sort of stuff. Now, there was a very interesting thing, Alec, you might recall a few years ago, I did a presentation on, is value investing the way to play AI? And my thinking there was that that what does AI help you do? It helps you cut costs. So don't you want businesses with huge cost bases? Because then AI can help you cut those costs, okay? And then you can get a return on your investment. The problem is everybody's doing them. So there's not a bank out there that's not using AI to try and reduce costs. And so that means their companies are not getting a return on the investment because their competitors are doing exactly what they're doing. And there was an MIT report not long ago, and it said that 95% of companies said, we're not getting a return on this investment. Now, when I go onto Perplexity, which I like, and I ask a question, you know, what is the level of pharmaceutical revenues that are coming off patent in the next 5 years? You know, it gives me an answer, $200 billion. Okay. That costs me a couple of dollars a month. I mean, $20 a month or whatever it is. You know, that is just incredible. So it's definitely costing the company more than $20 a month to provide that kind of instant information. But the problem is that if Perplexity decides, listen, actually, we need to charge $1,000 a month for this. Well, what are we going to do? We're going to go to Grok. We're going to go to Claude. We're going to go to Mistral. We're going to go to DeepSeek. So the competition out there is not going to allow these guys to raise money, raise prices. And if you look at the large technology companies and just take a step back and think years ago, you had Amazon in online retail and cloud. Okay. And that's what they used. They got into, they started with online retail and then thought, hang on, why don't we use cloud as well? You had Alphabet, Google in search. So effectively advertising. And you had Microsoft in enterprise, and you had Meta in social media. And then what happened is they all started moving into each other's space. So you had Alphabet moving into cloud, and you had Microsoft buying LinkedIn and moving into social media. And you had Amazon going, well, hang on, those guys are making good money on advertising. Why don't we go into advertising? Okay. But in OpenAI, they are all there. They're all there. And they're just spending, and actually the balance sheets are getting worse. Go and look at the balance sheets of those technology companies. They're getting worse on a net cash balance because either using money to buy back the share options or they're using money to buy the CapEx. And so the balance sheets are deteriorating. Even companies, you know, they're taking on debt. Amazon's got lots of debt. And so they are going to run out of money unless there's debt funders. And so this party's going to end and you want to be there when it ends. And so, you know, Jeremy Grantham, we know Jeremy Grantham. He's been around the block many times. Very wise guy. He said the US stock market remains grotesquely overpriced every metric that matters. Now, the problem is he's been saying that for a little while. Okay. But at some point it will come true. And as Howard Marks says, you can't predict, but you can prepare. And so how do you prepare? Well, I think everyone has to have a look at their portfolios and go, well, do I want, you know, let's look. The MSCI World Index has some 73% in US assets right now. That's the benchmark weighting. The question I have is if everybody was in cash, knowing what we know now, with prices at these elevated levels, all the rest, would we really all go and put, from a cash position, invest 73% of our money in the US right now? I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised. Certainly, all the investors I speak to in, you know, overseas, from Switzerland to UK, etc., they're all trying to figure out how to reduce their exposure to the US, because you've got to go where the puck's going. Now, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens. So the good news, though, is that out of every crisis comes opportunities. And when I look back at our fund, and we've been going since 2008, and we've taken whatever it is, 100 Rand to 1300 Rand, you know, we've had the global financial crisis, European financial crisis, Fukushima, negative oil prices, pandemic, Ukraine, tra-la-la-la. And what we've done is we've capitalized on the crisis, okay? And we've always found the diamonds in the dust. When people were saying, well, there's going to be a nuclear war in Europe, and obviously that meant European prices were low, and we were buying there. So we will sit and wait for the crisis, and we'll be disciplined. And we have a portfolio that looks nothing like the benchmark, because we don't care about the benchmark. We care about generating real returns for clients. And I'm not going to worry about, you know, what other people do. As John Templeton said, you can't do what others are doing and outperform. I mean, it just makes total sense. So we're just going to invest sensibly, and that's what we do. But I do think there's we are coming to the point, you know, where we really need to think about the risks and remember that thing that greed builds and fear's instant. And, you know, when I started out, I met, I did a VAC job at Seifert's, and Leon Kampfer was there, and we went out to coffee at the end of my couple of weeks there. And I said to Leon, what's your best advice you can give me? He said, always leave a little bit of money on the table for the next guy, because they are allowing you to take your money off the table. Okay. And so we sold too early. We sold the European banks. We did well out of European banks. We sold a little bit too early. That's fine. We're quite happy about that. You know, you actually want, it's quite liberating when you actually want the person who buys the shares to do well, because they're rewarded for the risk of that you've handed over to them. So maybe, Alec, maybe I end there and you have questions.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, a multi-award-winning, truly independent boutique wealth manager. Invest better with Brenthurst.